was going well, and I was running workshops. And then I got so many letters from I Could Do Anything, so many. I mean, I still get them. And they loved it and said they changed their lives. It was fabulous. And I began to notice something very, very interesting. I mean, I got letters for Wishcraft too, but more from I Could Do Anything, more every day. Buckets of letters, bags of letters coming from I Could Do Anything. And I still get them. But I noticed that 99% of the letters were about Chapter 6. They didn't say that, but they'd say, all this time I thought I was somebody who couldn't make up my mind what I wanted to do. And now I realize there's nothing wrong with me. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And so Matthew said, you better write a book about these people. I had called them scanners in Chapter 6. And it's people who have so many interests, they can't bear to settle for one. And they always felt like losers. And when I was seeing clients individually, you know, as a coach for so many years after I left Group Labs and went home, I didn't notice if you, I didn't care what your problem was. You had something you wanted and you had an obstacle and we would work on it. And I didn't work over and over with people. I would solve their problem and then I would send them to a success team. I didn't keep working with them. And so if somebody came in and said, I have too many interests, I'd question them and we'd figure out what was going on and we'd find a way to work with it. I'd either find the one that they could make a living at and the others they could do as a hobby or something else they could make a living at. But all the time I said, you're supposed to do what you're interested in. You have to do that. It isn't frivolous. You're not broken. You're not somebody who can't focus. You don't need to go to a psychiatrist. You know, it's you have a divergent mind, not a convergent mind. Albert Einstein had a convergent mind. He wanted to boil the whole universe down to a very beautiful, simple formula. There are people who have divergent minds, and that's Leonardo da Vinci. And every idea they have pops three more, and it's just a different kind of thinker.
It's a very interesting tool. We all know about it, but scanners forget about it.
Es gibt ein sehr interessantes Werkzeug. Wir kennen das alle, aber Scanner haben Tendenz, es zu vergessen.
And it really works.
Und es funktioniert wirklich.
It's called a calendar.
Es nennt sich ein Kalender.
Your wishes are like 100 little kids all trying to get through a door at the same time. They can't all get through the doors. But if they line up, they can get through the door.
You have to be a real human being, and you have to be in touch with your feelings.
That's me trying to look glamorous in my California junior high school. I had to set my hair in bobby pins 3 times a day. It was so strange. And I got older, I just cut it all off. Just like right now, I cut my hair myself. That's why it looks this way. I figure you got enough time to make your hair look good or to write a book. This, you have to understand, is for 1 cup only.
Hio has an amazing camera that will show every pore. I guess that's a good thing. This has been fun, but they really have to stop or they'll miss their plane back to Hamburg. Yesterday in the mail, I got 3 copies of my book in its German edition. And the book in English is called It's Only Too Late If You Don't Start Now. How to Create Your Second Life After 40. I really meant after 50, but nobody will buy a book like that in America. People say, I'm over 50. And I say, it was written for you, don't worry, over 60. And then, of course, 30-year-olds started calling in and saying, this book was written for me, because this is the first time I haven't been afraid to get older. And there's always a rainbow, usually in the darkest cloud. Flying over from the United States to Germany was getting to be very tiresome. It's a long flight, and I didn't want to do it anymore. I didn't want to stay in hotels. I wanted to come home. So mostly I spend my time at my apartment writing and do a little walking. And Matthew takes care of Leo. He's a mother and a father. And he does all the shopping, he does all the cooking, and he walks the dog. And so I just sort of sit there like some kind of movie star princess. And I wake up and have my breakfast and do my writing. And I wave at the boys on their way in and out. And it's a pretty easy life, I gotta tell you. I always get up in the morning and walk in the kitchen where he is, and I say, you know, Matthew,
I'm living the life of Riley. And he says, you are, Ma, you are.
Crucial for people to figure out what they want and to do it, what activity they want, basically. Or if they want to live by the sea and that's really it, fine. That's the punchline. That's it. Everything else follows from that. I know that matters. I'll tell you how it came to pass. I used to run peer groups for this psychiatrist. He had people running a special kind of group that had been actually developed by the drug program, where you hollered at each other and screamed at each other and people cried and they got to their feelings. And I was in that, a friend sent me to that group and it made me feel a lot better, and he hired me. I had $300 in the bank. I gave him the $300. I said, tell me when I run out of money, and he never told me. And so I was there for 6 months and then he hired me. And so I did the first part and that worked, and when something went wrong, I designed something new and that worked. That was the whole thing. Wishes and dreams. My only wish and dream was that I would be allowed to go to college forever and not ever have to take any exams. That was the only real wish I had. And I did that as often as I could, and as much as I could. And then reality intruded, and after that, my wish was to find some kind of job I wouldn't hate, because I knew I had a family to support, and I fell into the kind of work that I do naturally. And it's the kind you can't train for in college. They don't have a name for it. I mean, I went into a psych course, and I listened to one lecture, and I thought, no, this is just not for me. And so I studied anthropology, which didn't interest me very much, really, because I could get all A's in it, because they told me I had to graduate someday. So I graduated with honors, because I got all A's. And I don't remember much of it. I don't care much about it, except for one very important thing. I wish all coaches had to take comparative cultures, because, and all psychologists, because people think things are true of humans that aren't true of humans. They're true of humans in their own culture. I don't like any challenges. I mean, to me, it isn't a challenge to get to know you. It's like going to a great movie. I just have to figure out what I'm looking at. People really think everybody is like them. I'm glad you see that. No, I care so much about other people's wishes and dreams. I find them amazed. You know, everybody's gorgeous inside. I mean, like a great novel, like written by a great writer, like Tolstoy or better than Tolstoy. Everybody's like so great when you can just get them to want something, and then you say, what is it and why do you want it? What do you love about it? Because you learn, I love knowing that more than anything. What do you love about it? And when they answer me, I know whether they're telling the truth or not, because I'm watching their eyes. They can talk like boring, you know, but then when their eyes light up, I know I've got it. I got it. So without a dream or a wish, I do the work that I love. And once I find that, then you want to know inspiration, then I'm like a bloodhound. Like, you're through, you're finished. I mean, I'm your friend. You want to leave? That's really kind of too bad, because I'm coming with you. Somebody said, you find that out, you're like, you're all over somebody like a cheap suit. You won't let them go. I said, that's right. No, I won't. But think about it. I almost didn't find that. I did it with people, but I did it inefficiently because I had no authority to do it. You know, I did it with everybody. How do I help other people find their drive? That's what I'm driven to do. I'm driven to do it. If you don't know what you love, I'm driven to help you find it, because I know you love something. And if you don't know how to get it, I got to find out how you can do that. And if you don't want to do what I tell you, I'm cool. I mean, I'm not going to stay awake nights. But I know where to send you until, because I know it might take you 6 months to have the courage to do that for some good reason I don't know about in your past. So, so basically, I fell by accident into the work I love. And all I care about now is how do I find that for other people? Because nobody showed it to me. I just tripped and there I was. A writer should live over on the main street, over a store that a lot of, and a bar, and a place where people come every day and they're walking in and out. He should live over it and look out the window and see them. That's what a writer should. A writer cannot write about nature and peace. A writer can only write about people. Anytime somebody says, I'm not creative when I have enough time, I am creative when I'm in a hurry. When I teach a writing class, I sit down and say, okay, what will we do? And I say, you have, they say, I don't know what I want to write about, but what should we do? I say, you have a half hour to give me a table of contents with 24 chapters. They go, we don't know what we're going to write about. I said, I know, 24, time. They go, but, I say, 24, yeah, 1 minute's already gone. And they have to write 24 things they're going to write about as chapter titles. And when they're done, they say, this is, I can't, what did you make me do that for? I said, because if I gave you more time, you could never do it. There's a lot you can do, but I'm not giving you enough time to write this book. If I give you enough time to write this book, you'll only have enough time to do writer's block, and I have no time for writer's block.
I remember where I got the idea that you had to write that book. We were walking in a beautiful garden in Corfu, and you said something like, you mentioned it, probably at the Learning Annex, you mentioned it, how many people, such and so, and it turned out that like 90% of the room, plus a couple of people behind,
had lots and lots of interest.
And I said, well, then that's your market there, so you have to write that book. And I nagged you and nagged
you. He's such a nudge. He's a nudge.
I nag her all the time, including now.
But
Also, I think I'm probably more an acoustic hearing person than a visual person, so I prefer listening to things rather than reading them. In fact, when I read, I tend to hear what I'm reading. But when we started recording what you did and your lectures and the seminars, and I knew we had to record everything. And when I started transcribing them, it was like listening to music in a way. Mm. And the way you know if music is good or not is if it rings a bell, if it's on tune, if it's honestly played. And so I became an editor, not in the normal sense, but almost in a hearing sense. Mm. And some video stuff too. But
he became a fan is what he became, yeah. A very educated fan. Mm. And I was in New York and he was in Greece, and he would send stuff back saying, look what you said here. It was amazing. Amazing. I would not write a book without him. I had certain problems with the TEDx talk. I was terrified because I thought, my God, I have to speak only 18 minutes and I have to not forget anything. This is very bad for me. And so that's why I took notes, and that's why I wore those weird pants, and because they had pockets. And I thought, once I'm on the stage, they can't pull me off, so I'll be okay. Some people freeze when they're on the stage. I just freeze when I'm off the stage. So I got up there, and once I realized I could do what I wanted, then I was very, very comfortable on the stage. Because you have to go after your dreams and never tell me you can't do it. Just remember, we got Ronnie a great apartment in New York and a woman, a crazy woman he loves with all his heart. We can do anything. That's what I wanted to tell you. we're talking about the fact that I pay a lot of attention. I pay a lot of attention to my own happiness. And, for example, I had this up there to a print that was in the middle. I had that sitting there for me to look at. But this book I got, I used to, in Toulouse and everywhere, I would just look at it. If it got covered up, I got upset. And if I looked at this and the grays here, I don't know how to explain it. I felt like a God was in his heaven and the world was in its place. I felt like I was eating chocolate cake. I felt like the universe loved me. I felt like I wanted to kiss a baby. That's what I felt when I looked at those beautiful pieces of fruit and the gray. I had an artist friend who pointed out Cézanne's grays and Matisse's grays to me. And after that, I could see them. And I worship people who show me things that I couldn't see before. People who help me hear music that I just heard a lot of noise before. People who help me see things I didn't see before. And that's... So what I'm showing you today is very interesting. My work, yes, I'll get to that in a minute. But the things I love aren't just trivial. They aren't just trivial. I love to communicate and write, and I will do it for 10 hours until my arms hurt. But when I get up and walk away and I happen to see this, I go, oh, I just remember how happy life can be. And I really feel lucky that when I look at that, that's what happens to me. I feel that. And I came from a family that didn't know anything about classical music, and I knew it was good, so I listened to it, and I heard nothing. I just fell asleep. I heard a lot of walls of noise. I had no cynicism. If somebody said a book was good or music was good, Beethoven's good, he's good. Okay, just because I can't hear him doesn't mean he's not good. I didn't say everybody's faking and what's that bull. I said there's something there and I don't know what it is and I gotta know. And I knew I would never need it for anything. This is not a way of becoming successful or accomplished. There was no purpose in it except you're alive now. You've only got a certain amount of time, you better get to work and find out all the wonderful stuff. You can't stay ignorant till you're dead. I'm like in a big hurry to understand the mountains of Central Asia. It's like, why? Well, because right now I couldn't draw a map without from memory of what's going on with the Pamirs and the Karakorams and those places where they cry. I couldn't draw that. So what? Well, I might only live 5 or 10 years. I have to know it before then. Why? I don't know how to answer that question. It's like, why am I here? I'm grabbing all the candy I can. So I just wanted to say, it might be unusual that I spend that much time making myself happy. La la la. La 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 la. So that when the time finally comes that I go, I say, well, I could have done a few more things, but I did pretty well. I really took my chances. I did what I wanted to taste it. I wanted to touch it. I wanted to feel it. There's an original person in here. I never met her until I could throw away all those young people I was supposed to be and could turn into that person that I really am. And that's what life is for. That's what I wanted to say. If you tape that, and if everything I say you record and you show that to the world, after I die, I will send my ghosts to come find you and they will come get you. And they will show you that you must never repeat what I just said because it's solid bullshit.